Well, tonight on Coast to Coast, the great debate between Deepak Chopra and Leonard Mlodinow as we merge science versus spirituality, their work War of the World Views. This half hour, you'll hear exclusively from Deepak Chopra. The second half hour of this hour, Leonard Mlodinow will join us. Next hour, the debate begins. And then in our final third hour, we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me welcome back Deepak Chopra to Coast. Deepak, of course, author of more than 60 books that have been translated into more than 80 languages. Let me tell you something, that's quite an accomplishment, including various New York Times bestsellers. Dr. Chopra is also a fellow of the American College of Physicians, a member of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the adjunct professor at the Kellogg School of Management, and the senior scientist with the Gallup organization. Time magazine described Deepak Chopra as one of the top 100 heroes and icons of the century and credits him as the poet prophet of alternative medicine. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Deepak, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you. It's great to be on this show.
My pleasure. And looking forward later to talking to Leonard Mlodinow about both your works here, War of the World Views, and then the big debate we'll have next hour with both of you. What have you been up to these days?
Well, last few days I've been traveling with Leonard, you know, going around the country on this debate. And then as soon as this is over, I'm doing a book called Superbrain with the Harvard geneticist and neuroscientist. So I'm having a good time.
It's good that you and Leonard are friends and you can keep this as a friendly debate, though sometimes these views are very different, aren't they?
They're quite different. I think nobody argues about the facts. It's how you interpret the facts.
Well, that's absolutely true. Deepak, you've been on our program before, and you are one of the world's foremost authorities on just about every specific area of alternative medicine, consciousness, spirituality as well. Are you seeing a twist, a change from people nowadays? Are they turning more towards spirituality and away from mainstream?
I think there's a certain element of what you might say a crisis in meaning and purpose. And human beings are creatures who seek meaning. And when we lack meaning in our lives, then our lives seem to fall apart. And that actually I've seen even as a physician, that when people don't have any meaning in their lives, they even get physically unwell. And if there's one definition of spirituality that is partly adequate, it's that it's the meaning-seeking aspect of our lives. It's our inner consciousness, which says, who am I? What's my purpose? Is there a soul? Does death mean anything? Is there a God? If so, does that God care about me? How do I increase my capacity for love, for compassion, for joy, for equanimity? What is the source of my insight, my intuition, my inspiration, my creativity, my free will? You must ask Leonard when you get on. If this is a completely mechanistic universe, then do we have free will? I hope you will ask him that, because in his worldview, we don't. It's an illusion.
Yeah, I've got to stay impartial in this debate, Deepak, but as you know, I side with you on just about every issue, and it's going to be very interesting for me to try to remove myself from those views.
I'm challenging him on questions like free will.
Exactly. How much of this is based on having faith in something, faith in what's going on in the universe, faith in how we were created? How much of that?
I am beyond that stage. I think you have to really understand that spirituality is about, if anything, faith in yourself, and that is self-awareness. You know, when you ask yourself, who am I, you realize that go inwards and self-observe. And there's many ways of doing that. You observe your own breath, you observe the sensations in your body, but you also observe the world and realize the world arises and subsides in your own consciousness. Every sound that we hear, every texture that we experience, taste or smell or form or color, happens in our own consciousness. So our consciousness is the realm of all our experience, whether it's external, whether it's the experience of the body, or it's the experience of our mental space, which is our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our desires, our memories, our dreams, our inner world. All that is happening in our own self. Our relationships and how we interpret them happens in our own self. If we cannot answer the question, who am I, it's very difficult to really know the world, because right, the world that I know is the world that is in relationship to me. Now, science, while it's very good at understanding the world in terms of physical, you know, how many units of mass and energy does this particle have, or how did the universe evolve after the Big Bang, or what is the nature of evolution? All that's great, but what good is it if I don't know who I am? Because everything that I know is in relationship to who I am. If we look at science, and Leonard says, science based on a loop of what he calls theory, experiment, and observation. But where is theory conceived? In our own self, in our own consciousness. Where is experimentation designed? In our own self, in our own consciousness. Where do we observe from? Our own consciousness. And if we haven't addressed our own consciousness, then we haven't addressed anything.
Let's go back to the early days of Dr. Deepak Chopra. Did you always have this belief system, or did it change?
Well, it's a very interesting cycle. When I was growing up, yes, I was influenced by, of course, my parents and my culture and my tradition. Then I lost it completely. When I went to medical school, you know, I got so involved in basically studying the biology of science that the spiritual kind of underpinnings were no longer part of my awareness. And when I became a doctor and started practicing as an intern and resident, I didn't have any time for spiritual or, existential dilemmas. But when I started to practice, there were many things that happened. One is I was intrigued by the fact that you could have two patients who had the same illness, saw the same doctor, got the same treatment, and could have completely different outcomes. Also, my training was in endocrinology, and I was also studying neuroendocrinology. So I was studying brain chemistry, and during that period, we were identifying the hormones of emotion, neuropeptides. Today, we recognize some of the popular ones, serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, opiates, endorphins. But now, since then, there are hundreds of these chemicals that mediate our emotions. So I was seeing a connection between what happens in our consciousness and what happens in our biology. And the third thing was, you know, when you work in an emergency room, and I had a big stint in the emergency room for more than a year, I worked as a full-time emergency room mm-hmm. doctor. I used to see a lot of patients dying, you know, and, you know, I saw the patients go through stages of fear and panic and anger and denial, and then a resignation and a helplessness into death. And, you know, I would wonder, does anyone die at peace? And does anyone go through the experience of even joy and equanimity in the face of death? And the only place I've seen that, by the way, is back in my own culture. My own father, right, at the age of 85, 86, he told my mother one day, I think this is my last day, I say goodbye to my kids, and then he went into meditation.
My God.
And he was not sick before that. So, you know, that is something that's not seen much here. Everybody dies in the hospital. It's a very gruesome experience for a lot of people. What we call a prolongation of survival, in many cases, prolongation of misery. So, you know, I think when we take medicine and completely make it a mechanistic science, we deprive ourselves of the dignity of being human. And to be human is to be spiritual.
Why does science and spirituality knock heads all the time, Deepak? Why can't they just join hands and try to get us these answers?
I think they will. I think, you know, we will see an expanded science that will say it's not all about the observation and that which we observe. It's also about the observer. In any observation, there are three components. There's the object of observation, which is the physical world. There is the process of observation, which is the mental world, because we observe through our minds. And then there's the observer, which is the soul or the spirit. And science has made it a business of not looking at the observer. It's just, you know, the methodology of science. And in my view, when the methodology is incomplete, then science gives us partial truth. It's, in fact, an excellent map for partial truth. But partial truth, in the absence of the wholeness of vision, can become diabolical. So, you know, science has given us great gifts, but it has also given us the technologies of mechanized death, the atomic bomb, and nuclear warfare. It has given us biological ways of destruction. And it's not because scientists are bad people. I think every scientist, like other human beings, expresses a whole range of human experience. But when science is devoid of values, or is not value-based, then the technologies it creates can be diabolical and can destroy life on this planet. I mean, whether it's global warming or unsustainability or the extinction of species, or some of the modern epidemics that have occurred because, you know, we have misused science, then we are risking our extinction. And it is a very strange thing that, you know, on the one hand, we've created the best technology in the world, and on the other hand, it is our modern capacities with lack of spiritual development that risk life on this planet. And spirituality is about the sanctity of life. It's about reverence for life. It is also about seeing our connection with all of life and all of creation. And therefore, you know, there are two worldviews. Spirituality looks at a living planet. And by the way, you know, I told you my next book is with Rudy Tanzi, and I was talking to him earlier today, and you know, I was also checking on his Twitter page.
Yeah.
And he said today in his Twitter feed that 90% of the cells in our body are bacteria. We are a collection of different species, as is the earth. So, you know, the earth is also a living organism.
That's right.
And in the spiritual worldview, the whole universe is alive. You know, if by life we mean the cycle of birth and death and growth and maturity and self-replication and self-organization, then we are part of a living cosmos. And that's, you know, one of the debates we have in the book as well, because, you know, the book is divided into four sections: cosmos, life, the mind-brain problem, or the mind-brain connection, as we call it, and then finally the question of God. So in all these things, we have different worldviews. You know, Leonard argues purely for the physical description of the universe based on the scientific theory of how the universe began and evolved. the connection between, say, gravity, the general theory of gravity, Einstein's theory of relativity, and quantum theory. And I propose a creative first cause that preceded what they call the Planck epoch, 10 to the power of minus 43 seconds following the Big Bang, when there were no laws of nature and there was no space-time. And any understanding of creation must take into account, you know, what was there before the so-called beginning.
That's
is
right.
There a first cause or not? Similarly, when we talk about genetics, where Leonard argues for physical evolution through random mutations and natural selection, I agree with evolution, but I also know from my conversations with cutting-edge evolutionary biologists that our understanding of evolution is evolving, that random mutations are not an explanation, complete explanation, for the variety and speed of what we call viable adaptations or life on the planet, that evolution may be self-directed and purposive. Similarly, you know, because of the mechanistic view of science, Leonard argues that the mind is just a product of, you know, our brains, whereas, in fact, I believe that the mind is more primary, that thoughts become molecules instead of molecules becoming thoughts. And, you know, right now as I'm speaking to you and people are listening to us, their mind is actually in relationship to our minds. And this interaction between you, me, and the people who are listening to us is actually causing their brains to change. Certain parts of the brain are acting and certain parts are not, depending on the kind of conversation we're having.
Right.
And that requires neural maps or remodeling of neural structures. So I think mind is before brain. And similarly, the only place where we do agree, strangely enough, is that Leonard says that while science often casts doubt on spiritual beliefs and doctrines, it cannot and does not conclude that God is an illusion, which I was thrilled to hear because, you know, recently you've seen a spate of very angry and emotional denial of a divine entity, Richard Dawkins being a leading advocate of what he calls the God delusion. Well, Leonard, who is, I think, much more of an authority on science in terms of the cosmology of science. After all, you know, Leonard is the co-author of Grand Design
with Stephen Hawking. Yeah.
And also for Briefer History of Time with Stephen Hawking. He holds the opposite view. So I'm glad to hear that.
All right. Well, stand by. We're going to bring Leonard in, Deepak. We're going to give you a little break for a half hour before we bring you both back for the great debate at the top of the hour. But Leonard Mlodinow now joins us next, co-author with Deepak Chopra, War of the World Views. We'll be right back. Well, does late night radio get any better? Up next, Leonard Mlodinow joins us. He's the co-author with Deepak Chopra, the book War of the World Views, Science versus Spirituality. Let's get Leonard's view on some of this. And then next hour, the two will debate on Coast to Coast AM. Let me tell you a little bit about Leonard Mlodinow. He's been on the program before, received his PhD in theoretical physics from the University of California at Berkeley, currently teaches at Caltech. His books include Feynman's Rainbow, Euclid's Window, and Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives, and also, of course, wrote several books and collaborated with Stephen Hawking, The Grand Design, of course, which is an incredible book about invoking God and how that God is not necessary to explain the origins of the universe. So I'm looking forward to the debate next hour between Leonard and Deepak Chopra. But we're going to talk and get some of Leonard's views right now before we get into that debate. Leonard, welcome back.
Thanks, George. Great to be here.
My pleasure. Let's talk a little bit about the collaboration with Deepak Chopra. How did you two get together on this?
We met at a debate between Deepak and a fellow named Michael Shermer of the Skeptic Society at Caltech, and I was in the audience, and Deepak was using a lot of terms in physics to help justify his positions. And Michael was objecting to that, and the moderator recognized me as a physicist in the audience, and so after the debate during the question and answer session, he pulled me out and asked me to ask Deepak a question. And so I asked Deepak if he would like me to teach him some quantum theory and help him understand it better, and he very graciously said he would, and we became friends.
So he had an open mind, huh?
Yeah, he had an open mind to learning about physics. I can't say I've changed his views on the universe very much, but he's been a good student of physics, and I think I've clarified some of the concepts for him.
Well, you know, he's a man of science, as you are, Leonard. Took a different route, went into medicine, yet things changed for him, and his views changed. And let's talk about you and yours for a moment, and then we'll get ready for the big debate here. And no need to take off gloves because you two aren't boxing.
That's right.
Which is good.
We believe you can have a civil and respectful debate.
That's right. Absolutely. Which I think is something that's missing in America these days. I
agree.
But let's talk about science versus spirituality. Why can't they both meet in the middle?
Well, first of all, you know, even though that's our subtitle, science versus spirituality, I don't like that dichotomy. Scientists, at least, can be very spiritual. I don't know what it means to call a subject spiritual, but the people who do science, most of them are very spiritual. You have to be spiritual to be asking the questions of, why are we here and how does the universe work? So when we say science versus spirituality, we're really talking about two approaches to knowledge and how we attain it. And Deepak can explain his approach, which is what I would call philosophy. That is kind of a top-down approach where you have some ideas about how you think the universe should work and you try to justify them, versus science, which works from the bottom up, which makes observations, which are and starting from a very neutral position as to what's really going on, makes observations and builds an idea of what's going on based on those observations. So you can have science and spirituality in the sense that we're all searching for meaning of life, and we're just doing it in two different ways, and our methodology is what differs.
Okay. Can you say at this point you think you're right, he's wrong?
Well, it depends on what aspect you're talking about. Where we differ, I'm a great admirer of Deepak's ideas about humanity and how people should treat each other and what life is about and meaning of life. And those are questions that science doesn't really address, and science wasn't made to address, and science doesn't have to address that. I don't see any reason we should require science to do something that it's not. But where Deepak's ideas have something to say about how the physical universe operates, that's where we disagree, because we don't see any. He talks about organizing principles behind the laws of nature, outside consciousness that we all participate in, purpose in the universe. And as a physicist or as a scientist, we don't see any of this happening. We make our observations, we form our theories, and we found no need to. We've never observed purpose in the universe. There may be purpose in our lives. That's a different thing. But the laws of physics, the mathematical laws that tell you what's the electron going to do, they don't have any purpose. They just are what they are. And on the whole, as it all gets put together, we have these wonderful things called living beings, and we feel that we have a purpose in life. But that's a different question than purpose in the fundamental physical laws.
Don't you think, though, it's unusual that even with the laws of physics, they have such order to it?
Well, the laws of physics don't have the order, but there's order in the phenomena of nature. And this is one of the mistakes that people make. If you see something that is wondrous or awesome or very beautiful, orderly, you tend to think that something must be designing it. I think in nature, Deepak talks about the human beings and our feeling of love and compassion. He always speaks very eloquently about that, and appeals to our emotions and to our feelings that could only arise from some kind of design. But, there are wonderful, complex, beautiful things in nature all the time that I think most people don't view as having necessarily come from design. The snowflakes are very ordered and beautiful. If you look at them closely, the rainbow. I mean, there are many things that just come from molecules getting together and following the laws of nature. And to a scientist, that's what living things are, too. That doesn't diminish their beauty and the wonder and the wonderfulness of human beings. It just explains them.
But what is it all about when you say explains them? I still have a difficult time trying to ascertain why the heck we're even here.
Well, I agree with you. And as I say, those aren't the questions that science addresses. So I think that a lot of times people don't like science, or they disrespect science because science doesn't answer those questions properly for them. And what I think people should understand is that science, that's not the purpose of science. And science doesn't deny that those are important questions. And scientists believe those are important questions. But those are questions, those are psychological or spiritual questions for us all to deal with for ourselves. And science was made not to address those, but to address the questions of the physical universe.
Leonard, you're a theoretical physicist. About a month ago, the scientists working at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, they say that they may have a particle called a neutrino, which may have gone faster than the speed of light. Is that even possible?
Well, this just shows you a good aspect of science, which is that scientists are open-minded. If this is true, what they discussed, what they saw, what they did was an experiment where they had neutrinos produced in CERN in Geneva, and then they measured neutrinos in Italy, and using a very finely timed GPS system, they measured the difference in time and concluded that they seemed to be going a little bit faster than the speed of light, which would totally revolutionize physics and cause us to question the very foundations of everything that physicists believe. Now, since then, there's been a lot of work on that, and most physicists don't think that's going to pan out. And what we're going to do, though, rather than just saying it, is to repeat the experiment. So we're going to repeat the experiment the next few months, and we'll see what happens. But I think for me, the great thing about that, the great news from there, is how open-minded and how readily physicists looked at that, became ready to embrace it. The theorists began working on it, on what the implications are. The other experimentalists began working on trying to replicate the experiment. And it just shows you that we're not opposed to strange ideas or revolutionary ideas. It's just that we test them, and if we're wrong, then we move on.
As we look at what's happening in the universe these days, are you now a proponent of the multiverse theory?
Yeah, and you know, there are many different kinds of multiverses that come up, but in many ways in cosmology, it's a little bit complicated to explain, but in many aspects of cosmology seem to demand that there are multiple universes in different ways. And it's not something that anyone made up in order to explain, how our universe could become what it is today. I mean, because there are some fine tunings in the physical laws,
sure,
of our universe that seem miraculous if there's only one universe. But if there's many universes, then it doesn't seem miraculous anymore, because some support life, some don't. And that is an explanation that we gave in the grand design for the fact that the universe is very finely tuned. But nobody came up with those theories to explain that. It's just that these theories, as our ideas of cosmology progress, they seem to be popping up for other reasons that are related to our observations.
What could be happening on those other universes right now?
Well, I'm afraid that is probably unknowable. So let me explain what that means, because
sure,
one might say, well, if physics is all about observation, how could you have things that are unknowable as part of physics? But you know, there are theories in physics that all in order to be accepted, a theory in physics has to be testable and falsifiable. So a theory must make predictions that you can check. That's the basis upon which we accept it. But that doesn't mean that all aspects of the theory must be testable. There are, you know, in quantum theory, for instance, there are things called virtual particles that come in and out of existence that are a very key part of quantum theory, but we cannot, in principle, even observe them. However, we can observe their effects indirectly, and we can see that they're a necessary part of quantum theory, and we can test quantum theory in other ways. And the multiverse is kind of like that. These theories demand other universes to exist, but that doesn't mean we can go there and actually look there. So those universes are not connected to our universe in any way that they can cause anything or that here or that we can observe anything there. So they're more like mathematical constructs. And we, you know, if the theories that we that include them are tested and seem to work, then we believe that they exist, but we can't get in touch with them.
You know, I do believe that this very mysterious universe that we live in is absolutely marvelous. I mean, you know, everything we see, things that science begins to discover, just amazing things that are out there. Even as a scientist, you've got to be impressed with it, you know what?
Don't say even. You should say especially as a scientist. I make that point in the book. The scientists are the ones who, more than anyone else, appreciate these things and are, you know, are driven to awe and wonder by them because we deal with them, we think about them every day. And even more than that, scientists are people who were driven to their field by just that feeling. Who's going to, you know, most scientists are pretty smart people, right? You could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you could make five times as much money, you could have an easier life, you don't have to work day and night to try and, you know, conduct this very, very, very difficult research. But we do it because we are driven to understand the universe. We're driven by this feeling of awe and wonder. So scientists are the people, you know, people think that, like you said, even a scientist, but it's really especially scientists who feel that way. And I should say that this adds to, I think, human spirituality in general, because science, by revealing these wondrous aspects of the universe, I think that that's enhancing spirituality and religion that tries to deal with them from another point of view.
You know, when we talked a few months ago about your collaboration work with Stephen Hawking with the Grand Design, I think a lot of people confuse Stephen Hawking's views on just what is out there in the universe. And we were talking about that with you, Leonard, at that time. Is that still haunting him a little bit, or have people come to a better understanding of the work?
I think that with time, people have come to, you know, to a better understanding. And I was on probably 60 or 70 interviews clarifying what we really said.
Yeah,
and we
exactly.
We did not say that God did not create the universe, right? We talked about that. So some, you know, shows got it right, but some headlines got it wrong. But, you know, science can never say that, you know, that there is a God or that there isn't a God or that whether a God created or didn't create the universe. All we say is that physical theories show that it's not the idea of God is not required to create the universe. But then there's you might call that a fine distinction, but I think it's an important one. And so I think people have understood that a little better since then. But also, I think just the furor has kind of died down and people have moved on. But Stephen was getting, me too, but especially Stephen was getting kind of harassed for a while after that.
I remember when you came on and you corrected that based on what was going on just about every website on this planet. And, you know, at least we did our part to get people to understand that a little bit more. When we get into our debate with you and Deepak, what I'll do is have each of you have an opening statement, and then I'll throw a question at each of you, and we'll take turns in terms of who answers which one. And we'll just see what the audience says when we take phone calls later on, Leonard, with all of them. Have you found that this debate with Deepak has been, it hasn't been what we would say, you know, rough. It's been pretty professional. It's been pretty, I think, respectable, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Deepak is a very gracious and, you know, smart man. And we've had a great time together traveling around and having these discussions. And we have them in, you know, in public in front of hundreds of people with moderators. And it's been a pleasure. And I have to say, his spirituality has affected me as well. He's gotten me started meditating. So,
oh, really?
I think I've always been a spiritual person, but the meditation is something I haven't done regularly, and he has me doing it, and I enjoy it, and I recommend it.
And I wonder if your touch of science has rubbed off on him a little bit.
Well, you can ask him.
We should. He wanted me to ask you later about free will. I'll do that later in the debate. He said, all right. Make sure you ask Leonard about that. And so as you look at the planet today, are you convinced that we're going down the right path?
No, certainly not. I think that, you know, spirituality in general is something, or morality, that we need to infuse more in people all over the world. And I think it's difficult. I think our political leaders are failing us, and you know, they're a lot of the this war between religion and science has been driven by politicians who want to distract people from the real problems of the country, and you know, appeal to their feelings that the other side is immoral or you know, unbiblical or something. And you know, I think that I'm not real happy with the way the world is going. You know, we overuse, we pollute, we have too many wars, genocide all over the world. It's a mess.
Do you think science and spirituality can get together to solve those problems? Not just the problems of science, the problems of consciousness. You know, those I think are slam dunks eventually. But I mean, the problems that you just pointed out.
Well, I think that's more something that spirituality, you know, religion, or whatever approach to that side, you know, has to solve. Because as I said, science is here to tell you how to predict the future, you know, in terms of the physical world, or the, understand the past of the physical world, but it really wasn't made to, you know, to address questions of morality, ethics, the meaning of life. It's not, that's the wrong tool for that. I mean, science can give you some technical aid. Science can give you the catalytic converter to make the cars less dirty, right?
That's right.
But that's not a solution to why people drive so much, or people, you know, refuse to take public transportation or whatever. They don't want to fund railway systems or, you know, all the other things. So I think that's something that we need more spiritual approaches for.
All right, Leonard, stay with us. We're going to call Deepak back. We're going to get him on for an hour debate, and then in our final hour, we'll just take phone calls for both of you here on Coast to Coast AM. Leonard Mlodinow and Deepak Chopra, co-authors of the book War of the World Views. The Great Debate is next on Coast to Coast AM.